Gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Well, on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com, proudly brought to you by GorillaMedia.co.nz. Everybody out there, I think, is having a, maybe a little bit freaked out about a lot of the news that's coming out. And so you should be. I don't think that anybody in this day and age could deny the fact that humanity's in big trouble, regardless of whether it's humanity's fault or not. I don't think it's particularly unlikely. You know, everybody's...
Well, I disagree with you there, Vinny. I disagree with you saying I don't think anyone could deny it. Plenty of people can, it seems. Plenty of people can. It's ridiculous.
Well, I'm talking about reasonable doubt here, man. You know.
Well, since when were people reasonable? I mean.
Well, you know, that's why common sense I say is now rare sense, because it's just so uncommon.
I mean, I feel the inspiration behind these comments is, folks, there's this Facebook group that started. It basically wants to ban the show being broadcast in Hamilton, New Zealand. And there's a couple of freaks on there. That's a nice word for them.
I've added you to the group, by the way, Will.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. I just haven't unleashed on those.
Yeah. Just wait for it.
There's a little demon called Hannah on there who wrote a comment to Vinny saying, the only manipulation, the only brainwashing going on in this world is in your head and is coming from you. I mean, Hannah, you better hope there's manipulation going on. You better hope you're brainwashed, you little... Otherwise, you must be agreeing with over a million people being killed in Iraq. If there's no brainwashing going on, that means everyone must be agreeing with the mass murder of innocents. That must mean everyone's agreeing with having us poisoned in our food and water every day. Are you agreeing with that? If you're not agreeing with that, then you better call yourself brainwashed. Put your hand up and say, I'm brainwashed, Will. Sorry, excuse me. I'm just a little stupid turd who doesn't understand anything about reality.
Yep.
But if you can't do either, then you deserve to go down. But don't drag the rest of us down with you. It's like Lord of the Flies. It's like Lord of the Flies here, and we're surrounded by a bunch of fat, ignorant little piggies who can't stand up for themselves.
Mm-hmm. What I found really funny is that she told me that radio is not a soapbox for what I think. What is radio if not a soapbox? You know, come on.
You're right, honey. It's a soapbox for what I think about you. And it's a soapbox for all the abuse I want to throw your way and all your kind, because you represent the scum that's dragging this planet down. You are the dark matter of the universe.
You're listening to the angry sound of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Well, on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And we'll be right back, folks. Show, ladies and gentlemen, we have a very special guest for you. His name is Joseph Green, and he's just recently released a book. Joseph, welcome to the program.
Good to be on.
Oh, yeah. Now, what is the name of your book?
It's called Dissenting Views.
Well, that's dangerous, man.
I hope so.
Specifically, what kind of dissenting views are you covering in your little work here?
Well, the subtitle is Investigations in History, Culture, Cinema, and Conspiracy, and I think that just about covers it. A lot of it is political history, but I'm very interested in philosophy, so there's a lot of philosophy in this book, I should warn you. I am kind of a professional critiquer, and so that's kind of what's in this book. But I cover the four major assassinations of the 60s and some assassinations maybe that are lesser known, which maybe we can talk about later, all sorts of things, you know, dissecting the timeline of the Patriot Act, the historical context for certain things. You know, I try to cover as much ground as I possibly can.
Well, it sounds like a very varied kind of work there. Now, the four main assassinations of the 60s, let's run on through them.
Yeah. Well, that would be, of course, John Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy, Dr. King and Malcolm X. Those are, you know, in my view and the view of many others, those are all basically political assassinations. And in fact, you could add a lot more to that. And they're the key events, I think, in American history, at least modern recent history, because what has essentially happened is that the left was wiped out. So by the time the Democratic Convention of 68 is happening, there's no one there to sort of take up the mantle to be, you know, the kind of Democratic leader that we needed. And then at the same time, you also have the what was called the Southern Strategy, where these various what used to be Democratic states in the South, because of the racial issue, the racial divide, they basically turned red. They became Republican. And so since then, there's been this enormous shift in the United States to where now, if you look at the political spectrum, there just isn't a left anymore. You have a kind of centrist, which is sort of what the Democratic Party is, sort of corporate centrist, all the way to this insane right wing, where, you know, the Sarah Palins of the world, who are just, you know, sort of fundamentalist lunatics.
Well, Marx did allude to the fact that democracy would be the surefired way to get communism in.
Yeah. In fact, Plato said something very similar. He said that of all the various types of you know, political organizations, that democracy leads to tyranny the fastest.
Anybody who's living in the continental U.S. at the moment, or pretty much any first, quote-unquote, first-world English-speaking nation in this world today, they're all living under democracies, and they're all police states full of scum.
Yeah, I mean, that is a strange thing that's happened. I mean, you know, like Great Britain is the classic example, right? It's the most you can't go anywhere without getting your picture taken by somebody. That is a peculiar situation that's come up, and it is hard to sort of put it all by accident, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, well, you'd have to be a conspiracy denier.
Exactly.
Now, I wanted to talk about the kind of philosophy behind what you do a little bit. I mean, when you're talking about dissenting voices in this modern age, I mean, conspiracy theories often come into the foreground as the type of ultimate dissent, because there's nobody in this world that dissents more than quote-unquote conspiracy theorists, which used to be known as researchers.
Right. No, that's absolutely right. It's there's this allergy to the term conspiracy, and again, it seems to go back to the 60s in America. There's a there was this I just lost his name now, but this article that was written in 1964 called "The Paranoid Style in American Politics," and that attitude that's typified in that article about conspiracy theories. Now, that book was mostly about right wing conspiracy theories, but nevertheless, it's sort of in the wake of the Kennedy assassination, and there seems to be this effort to control language, to control thought, and to prevent anyone from even seeing a conspiracy anywhere, so that people believe that because some conspiracies are false, that therefore that they're all false, and that anybody who talks like that is a lunatic. And it's very much the situation you have today, where if you're watching the news, and it doesn't even have to be, you know, something as lunatic as Fox News, it could be, you know, CNN or whatever, any of the major stations that exist out there, you're not going to have somebody talking about you know, conspiracies in any kind of in any way that makes sense, because you can't talk about these things because ultimately they point to the government, and if they point to the government, then you're not only are you pointing the finger at the institutions, you're also pointing the finger at these media institutions that have been covering up all these years.
Oh yeah, and you can't point the finger at the government. I mean, after all, what are they? The biggest mass killers technically in the world, yeah. The world's history. You know, if you're going to get be afraid of something that's going to end your life, don't be afraid of a lone gunman or a mass murderer or somebody mugging you when you come home. Hey, be afraid of your freaking government, because they will kill you, they will steal everything you've got, and they will get away with it.
Sure. I mean, it's like I think it was Bill Hicks who's pointed out that, you know, in the United States we have all this pride in our military. Well, aren't they hired killers?
Aren't you all effing hired killers? Shut up! You are thugs, and if we want you to go blow the crap out of a little nation of brown people, we'll let you know. Until then.
Exactly. And that is, I mean, when you break it down, that is their essential function. That is what they do. You can cover it up with all this other stuff.
Be one of the few, the proud, the murderers.
Yeah, exactly. The other point that you brought up to, which I think is so fascinating, and I don't know, you know, what it's like in New Zealand, but in the United States, we have this total obsession on television. All the television programs are about forensics and about these sort of, if you watched American TV, you would believe that everyone is a homicidal maniac, basically, that kills strangers, and then the cops come and they sort of use their forensic techniques to catch them. But, you know, of course, most people murder their wives, their friends, their children, right? You know, like, people are obsessed with this idea that a stranger is going to take their child. Well, that hardly ever happens. If a child gets murdered, it's generally by their parents. You know, because, of course, you kill those things that are familiar to you and that are close to you. That's something that's not very well understood. So there's this deep-set fear of the unknown that's connected to this deep-set fear of the stranger.
Well,
and I think
isn't that funny? It makes people turn against the general population as opposed to keeping an eye on what's familiar with them.
Yes, exactly. It's inimical to community. So I think it's hard for me to see it as an accident. That you've got all this, it's in essence, it's like, you know, from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m., you've got all these shows that are propagandizing you against cooperating with your neighbors because they might be, you know, psychotic killers or whatever.
Yeah. We've got these shows in New Zealand. I mean, we get all the ones like CSI and all the sub-CSIs that they're now releasing, of course, as well as programs like Neighbors at War, where you have two people arguing over a fence and all of this kind of stuff. And it's conflict. You never see people, very rarely do you see people getting together and doing something good for each other or for their community because, hey, that's not what you're supposed to be thinking about, ladies and gentlemen. You're not supposed to be thinking about what good you can do in this world. You're supposed to be afraid of what bad might be done to you.
Exactly. And they're all identified with the other. It's always the other, this stranger thing. And I think that type of mentality is what helps, you know, people get into the mindset of, like, you know, after the terrorist attacks of 2001 in this country, that, you know, 19 Saudi Arabians allegedly that, you know, that perform these acts means that we should invade Iraq.
I love it, eh? You know, the brainwashed, dumbed down general public are just like, oh, well, Bush said it must be true. After all, his daddy's only the ex-director of the CIA responsible for running a whole lot of drugs into this country.
It is astonishing. I mean, you just wonder how people could possibly come to that conclusion, and you know, TV is a powerful thing, and the father figure is a powerful thing. Because it's all connected with the father, right? George Bush comes down, and we all say, okay, we rally around him, and you know, he's our guy, and it's just stunning to me.
Well,
and actually,
I see there, how could people come up with these conclusions? And my answer is they don't come up with these conclusions. These conclusions are come up with for them, and they simply listen and obey.
Well, sure. And it's hard not to, you know, sometimes I get into, you know, you can get very misanthropic thinking this way. But it's not their fault. I mean, you're put through a system of education where the most important grade you'll ever get in your life isn't conduct. I mean, that's the, you know, the American system of education is not designed to promote free thought. It's designed to get everybody to pay attention, to sit down. You know, every 45 minutes, you get up, you go to your next thing. You know, and it's not, you know, and of course, that's not an accident either, because it was designed by industrialists who needed those people to work machines all day. So you have to be able to endure boredom. That's what your education is. You know, it makes sense for them, but it's...
Now the education system really makes a lot of sense for me, and so do a lot of my previous work occupations.
Uh-huh, yeah, exactly. Yes. Yes, very true. Get to your desk, you know, do whatever you're told. Don't think outside the box. You know, this is, yeah, those are... It's a disaster if you don't behave in class, right? Not behaving in class is the worst thing you can do.
Oh, trust me, I know, man. I was suspended. I was suspended something like 17 times in my high school career.
All the great troublemakers are, you know, are suspended. So
yeah, that's the point. Yeah. Well, you know, and it's kind of funny, right? As people decide to look at people as troublemakers, when in actual fact, what they are is they're just not buying it. You know.
Absolutely.
And they think that because you're rocking the boat that everybody else is going to fall in the water, unaware that the water's only an inch deep and it's real hot outside, so you would like a dunk anyway.
Yeah. No, it's right. And not everybody learns the same way. The human beings are not necessarily constituted to sit in a room and be lectured at for 8 hours. You know, that has not been our experience in the, you know, that only, you know, that begins essentially with the Industrial Revolution. It's a very, very early, you know, school is a very, very modern invention. So,
yeah, the
fact that not everybody can learn.
You know, free education. I mean, children were hauled off by soldiers on horseback in the when free education was introduced. You know, it's just absolutely crazy stuff.
No doubt. Yeah, the whole education, that is very, very fascinating, the story of education. There's a really, really good book by John Taylor Gatto called The Underground History of American Education, which has all kinds of fascinating information, especially about the beginning. You know, he quotes from Rockefeller's occasional letters, and they spell it out. They just say flat out, what we want is, I think the phrase is putty in our hands. We want people, we want the current generation to do in our factories what their father's generation is doing imperfectly. So they want robots, basically. The book has some problems. It's he does not footnote anything, which drives me bananas. But it has a lot of really great information if you ever get a chance to check it out.
Now, speaking of which, I mean, with Descent itself, is there a rising current of it? Because, you know, I'm involved intricately in dissenting views. You know, it's basically my bread and butter. It's what I do day in, day out. So for me, it would be kind of a self-evident truth that dissent is on the rise. But is that me just brainwashed into my own way of thinking? Or is dissent really, truly on the rise?
That's a really good question, because you're right. You can sort of get into a situation where you say, well, everybody agrees with me because everybody you hang out with agrees with you, of course. But I don't know. It sometimes seems to me, I wear like sort of provocative t-shirts a lot of the time. They have various, you know, slogans on them and things. And I'm surprised, because I live in a very, very conservative place. I live in San Antonio, Texas. Texas, already a conservative state. San Antonio, big on military bases, huge church here. But people sort of make comments to me that suggest that they do sort of see through a lot of the stuff that goes on. And, you know, when I talk about certain things, I sometimes don't get as negative a response as I might have thought. I think there is this sort of idea in the back of people's minds that they are being lied to every day, and that the world is sort of full of nonsense. But they have so many other things to take care of. You know, they have their kids and they have their work every day, and they got to, you know, they got to pay the bills. They got a million things to think about. They don't necessarily have the time to sort of sit down and try to solve it for themselves. Well, which
I would regard that as just a self-defeatist excuse. But continue.
Well, I know, but I find it hard to sort of. I try not to be hard on people, I guess is basically what it is, because it is, I mean, to make a decision to, I mean, for you and I, maybe it's self-evident that if you see something that's wrong, or, you know, in our brains, with something that's clearly, you know, like in Gulliver's Travels, when somebody says the thing that is not, you automatically react and you say, this is going to influence my behavior and I need to take action A to defeat, you know, proposition B. But not everybody's like that, you know, and other people have other decisions that they've made to sort of live their lives. And although I might be disappointed in them, I can't just be angry at them, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at.
Yep. I hope you all enjoyed that, ladies and gentlemen, because, it's very, very fun. And that interview is not over, of course. After the break, we will be playing the second part of it. And I was expecting to have somewhat of a serious discussion, but it actually became really, really fun as it progressed. You know what I mean, Will, how an interview gets like that?
Oh, totally, totally. I mean, some great insight, though, nonetheless. It kind of did cover some serious issues, doesn't it?
Well, I suppose that's really what this show is about, you know, mixing in the serious with the insane, because, hey, that's the true nature of disinfo.
You know, and people who want some pop music on in this slot, you know, instead of listening to us rattle on for a couple of hours, hey, isn't the world full of all this pop entertainment, Vinny? Aren't we just inundated with it? Can't we just have some time for serious debate amongst the fun? Isn't there a balance to be had?
Yeah. Well, I asked the person who made that comment, name a time and a place. And he said, you know, Sunday afternoons is when I'm prepared to care about the world.
Yeah.
The epitome of the weekend warrior. I love it.
Well, people don't like us being on from 6 to 8 p.m. news time during New Zealand, in New Zealand here. And, well, hey, the news is throwing out their disinfo. Why can't we counter it?
Mm-hmm. And why don't they complain about the news, I wonder? You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show.
It's established, so it must be right.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You know, you can't question the establishment. It's never done anything wrong. It's never lied to anybody, has it? You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the Vinny Eastwood Show.com. Check out the archive.
Look at me, driving and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive.
And gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Just want to continue on with our misanthropic discussion with Joseph Green.
The whole idea of being a misanthrope is that you just kind of hate everybody and the way everybody is. And the reality is, unfortunately, that none of these people made the decision to be how they are. They were conditioned into it. And it's totally not their fault. I mean, their minds themselves are being controlled in a very, very strange way. Incredible psychological techniques have been deployed on our populations for God knows how long. And it has been so effective at producing this type of population that it makes a lot of people in our kind of area of expertise, trying to wake people up, enlightenment and thought and all of that kind of stuff. We often throw our hands up in the air and get frustrated with the symptom rather than the cause. And I think this is a big mistake.
No, that's absolutely right. And that's, you know, you hit upon something else that that I've been sort of trying to work on, which is this this feeling of community, this idea that that dissenters can group into groups that don't necessarily agree about every little thing. And we've been trying to do this in the Kennedy area, because one of the things about the Kennedy researchers, especially the first and second generation, is that a lot of them just hate each other because they have their various ideas and their theories about what happened, and they're unable to get along because of ego concerns or whatever. And one of the things that we've been trying to do is to try to reach out to people who are, you know, a little bit younger and even younger than me. Like there's a lot of researchers out there in their 20s who are doing, you know, good work, and try to make a decision that we're not going to beat each other's throats for petty reasons. That, you know, even if you think that it's this or I think that it's that, if we both basically agree that we're against multinational corporations, let's say, taking over the world, we can sort of get behind that. And I've even argued this with some of my leftist friends that, you know, we can even get some of the fundamentalist Christians with us because they hate the government too, right? We can argue about abortion later. But right now, what we agree on is that, you know, that corporations should not be persons, for example. If you rallied people around that simple idea that corporations should not be legal persons, you could accomplish a great deal in this world because a lot of bad things come about simply from that proposition that corporations have legal status that way as a human being or as a being.
Which is ridiculous in the first place. I mean, it's like if a corporation murders somebody, who are you going to throw in jail? You can't, you know, fit Lehman Brothers building into a prison, can you?
Yeah, precisely.
You know,
precisely.
March the skyscraper, you know, do the perp walk, chuck it into the back of a Chevy Suburban and then drive it to the courthouse, can you? It's not possible.
No, it's not possible at all. And in point of fact, you know, it's a good example. What tends to happen when things like that go on is that, you know, the CEOs or the various people, they tend to get off or they get a few months or they pay a fine or they – and you would think that somebody like, you know, like the CEO of Enron, for example, on a certain level, I could promote a death penalty for people like that, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like if your actions affect or destroy the lives of, say, 500,000 people – like maybe you should be put to death at that point, you know, as opposed to some guy who kills a guy in a liquor store. I mean, and it sounds callous, and I don't mean to be, you know, I don't literally mean this, but it is shocking because like everything else in this life, justice is unequally meted out to those who are poor and who have no say and who have no influence, so that people who commit, you know, crimes that – because a person with essentially no money and, you know, is totally desperate and is committing crimes because they have no other thing they can do, of course, they have very little power to affect the world, right? They can affect, you know, a circle of like 20 people or 30 people or 100 people. But a guy who's the CEO of some transnational corporation can literally affect half the world with his decisions, right? If he decides it's, you know what, I think we're going to go ahead and go with this thing and we're going to go ahead and poison, you know, the Gulf of Mexico, then we can go ahead and do it, right? Or like Pfizer in that famous case, you know, made an actuarial decision to proceed with artificial hearts that they knew were defective because the lawsuits that they would get from the dead people were less than they would make from selling the artificial hearts in the first place.
It reminds me of Fight Club with his job was to go around and have a look at all these little car accidents and then multiply them by the probable rate of failure, A. Multiply them by the possible out-of-court settlement, B. A times B times C equals X. And if X is less than the amount of the cost of a recall, we don't do one. And that's the kind of it's heartless, right? And I think that if you're going to be running any company, anything or any institution for that matter that has disproportionate amounts of influence over human life itself, you do need to operate with your heart rather than your brain, because your brain will make decisions that your heart will not allow.
Well, that's true. But of course, you know, again, I don't, if you're familiar with the book Gangs of America or with the film The Corporation, if they've shown, yeah. I mean, the corporations are, even if you wanted to, in other words, there are no good companies. That's a myth, right? Totally. Because even if you were the CEO of a company and you wanted to make a decision that was, say, you know, that took people into consideration, you would be unable to legally.
Yeah,
because that would open up yourself to suit. at that point.
Yeah, and not to mention it would threaten the company's profits, so the board of directors would get you the kick the F out of that position. I mean,
absolutely.
And that's why America thrived so well on small to medium businesses, because when you don't have that disproportionate amount of influence, you don't have those other factors that come into it that prevent you from doing good things and having good business practice.
Exactly, exactly.
To a certain extent, of course. I'm not saying that all small to medium-sized businesses are operated by angels or anything, but
no.
I can kind of blanketly say that all giant multinational megacorporations are run by the devil.
I'd go along with you there.
Yeah,
even if they wanted to be angels, they are forced to be the devil to be in their position.
Yeah, yeah, and this is how the justice system really works. I mean, and in my opinion, it's why it's called the criminal justice system, because it's just criminal.
Exactly. There's this funny Dave Chappelle show where he spoofs that, and he says, "What if black people received white justice and white people received black justice?" And they show like this Dave Chappelle plays this guy who's like a small time drug dealer, and he's sort of invited to come to court by, you know, the government, and they're very polite to him, and then they show this sort of white businessman in his home, and the cops burst in and they shoot his dog and they beat him up, and this is the same point that, you know, the more influence you have in the system, the less likely you are going to face any kind of repercussions for your actions.
Yeah,
that's just the reality.
Yeah, yeah. In other words, it's a big club, and you ain't in it.
Carlin.
Yeah. Well, the late great George Carlin, and you know, these things, and I find that comedy is one of the things that really woke me up as a truther, is that you know, you can laugh about these terrible things while still acknowledging the monstrousness of how terrible they really are. Laughing about them is your only way to really deal with them and comprehend them in such a way.
I find that to be absolutely correct. Because, you know, really, if you sat down, if you understood the repercussions of everything that's happening and you're unable to laugh about it, you're in big trouble, because you'd be pretty depressed. I think it was, Hunter S. Thompson that said that we're probably not going to win. But what the hell else are we going to do? You know, we're not going to join him.
Well, interestingly enough, Hunter S. Thompson committed suicide by blowing his own head off.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah. I don't know what else was going on there. But,
well, it's funny, you know, the irony of things and incidents like that. Like the guy who sang the song "Don't Worry, Do Be Happy," committed suicide by blowing his own head off as well.
Did he really?
He did. He did.
I did not know that. Bobby. Oh gosh, I don't remember his name anymore. Bobby McFerrin.
Yeah.
Bobby McFerrin killed himself.
Yeah. Ironic, wow. Isn't it?
That is ironic.
And we have many incidents like this where, you know, inspirational people wind up having the worst lives. And it's because when you're trying to have a positive outlook and you look at reality, reality kind of subverts having a positive outlook to a certain extent, because reality is so bad. And people try to distract themselves from it. Some people with TV, some people with alcohol, some people with, you know, making jokes or whatever. But it doesn't change the situation. And so
that's
often,
true.
Often, and in my opinion, depression is just anger without the motivation.
In other words, giving up.
Yeah. This is the thing. We've got a society now that is so bad, so corrupt, so populated with brainwashed individuals, you know, I don't want to get misanthropic, of course, that it almost dictates a modality of depression and powerlessness. And I think that is the big lie that we all really need to wake up to, is that we indeed do have incredible amounts of power if only we would choose to use it and choose to not believe the lie that we're weak and isolated.
Well said. Yeah, I'm certainly with you on that. I mean, the it is funny to see. The other interesting thing about American television, which I don't watch a whole lot of, but when I do, I'm always struck by the amazing number of commercials for medications of all sorts. And I remember vividly, because this is one of my favorite statements that I ever heard, but there was this pill that you could take for generalized anxiety disorder. Generalized anxiety disorder? I mean, hell, that could be anything.
Something like 700 different things in the diagnostic statistical manual, all of which are made up in a circle of a clique of circular thinking, of course.
Absolutely.
Psychologists who put their hands up and say, "Hey, yep, that's a real disorder. Oh, okay. Have you got any research or evidence to back up this? No. Oh, okay, cool. Well, let's put a drug through the FDA for it then."
Yeah. Well, and again, it starts as a youth. You know, being disagreeable as a child means that there's something mentally wrong with you.
And ADD, for example, mm-hmm. another made-up disorder, in fact, stands for attention dad disorder, because you'll notice that if you ever go into a psychologist's office or anything like that and you ask him to try and diagnose you with ADD, he asks you this question: have you had your father missing for most or part of your childhood? And if you say yes, he goes, "Okay, well, you probably got ADD then."
Yeah.
Here's a drug.
No, that's – in fact, I recently was tutoring a kid. He was a 12-year-old who allegedly had attention deficit disorder. And when I was working with him, of course, the idea – again, it's this idea that all people learn the same way. And that was the problem with this kid, is that he wasn't being approached in the right way. And when they put him on his medication, he was a zombie. So he's unable to do anything. But the teachers liked that, because he wouldn't act up in class. So, but as long as you were telling him something interested and he was motivated and he understood what you were trying to tell him, he could stay at perfect attention. But, you know, if you're telling him a bunch of stuff he doesn't understand and is not interested in, well, of course he's distracted. Wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a good place to leave it. Joseph Green, ladies and gentlemen, what's your website there, mate?
It's called descendingview.net, and that's probably the best place to go. From there, you can get onto my blog and all the other stuff. And it has images and links to various organizations that I support, like the Coalition on Political Assassinations and JFKMI and things like that. Right. You can also contact me through there.
Okay, great. Joseph Green, ladies and gentlemen, from dissentingviews.net. Thanks for coming on the show, mate.
Absolutely. Been a pleasure.
Oh, mate, I'd like to thank Joseph from the bottom of my heart for agreeing to do that little interview with us. He's rushed off his feet at the best of times. And, you know, I for one, really, really enjoyed it, you know. What about you, Will?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, like I said, great insight. Agreed with Joseph just about everything, yeah. Yeah, people need to, yeah, I guess, you know, put certain differences aside in the interests of specific research in particular, and save the other debates for another day a lot of the time.
You sound like me, Will.
I think it's a good
who are you and what have you done with Will Ryan?
Well, to a degree. There's always degrees involved. Do you see, Vinny?
Oh, I don't believe you, bro. I think you're an MK Ultra plant now. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you by GorillaMedia.co.uk. The facts we okay, but the system fails. We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and roll, respect our right to live here on the land. It's Tino Ranga, Tina Tonga, we don't own the banks. The parliament does so where do you ever stand? They paying their bills off your back with hefty tax demands. Misleading our youth with alcohol, TV, contrabands. So kids act up and disturb our community. Uninformed public then consents to a planned absurdity. What? Replace our human rights with commercial slavery.
They print a handy buck and loan it to you. They charge interest on the loan, but don't print the interest, so there'll never be enough money to pay off all the debt. What do you get? Crash and burn. When will my people learn the truth? Come on now, before it's too late. Hey, I've got a new law for you. Let's make charging interest illegal and I'll tear it all.
And we're back!
The greedy wanna see me fail.
On American Freedom Radio, proudly brought to you in joint partnership with GorillaMedia.co.nz, it's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Now, we got an interesting post on the Facebook group here from fabulous rap man Genocide. Georgia has had a bill introduced to replace the electric chair with a guillotine. Oh, the French Revolution. Georgia lawmaker Doug Tepper, a Democrat, of course, has proposed a bill to replace the state's electric chair with the guillotine. His reason is that it would allow for death row inmates as organ donors, he says, since the blade makes a clean cut and leaves vital organs intact. Oh, God, that makes me just a little bit sick. In 95, a move to replace the electric chair with lethal injection failed in Georgia's assembly because legislators feared that prisoners could argue for a new sentencing hearing if the state changed the law. The guillotine, invented by the French Dr. Guillotine, was mainly used in the 18th and 19th century and chops off a person's head. It hasn't been used for decades in any country on this planet. I don't wonder. Maybe the fact that the state's massively in debt and can't even pay its electric bill maybe had something to do with it, eh? I'm not being serious, of course, folks. I mean, there is a group of lawmakers out there who think chopping people's heads off is a good idea. You know, criminals are a good first step in acclimating the public to the spectacle of death by beheading. The practical application of organ donation is a good excuse to implement guillotine production. By the time the Antichrist takes control, there should be some very skilled guillotine craftsmen out there, and the infrastructure for transporting such apparatus will be fully in place. Isn't that convenient? That's a story in from theforbiddenknowledge.com. You know, for goodness sake, everybody seems to be absolutely nuts, man.
On the subject of killing people, were you aware, Vinny, that apparently it's illegal here in New Zealand, or in Auckland in particular, it's illegal to dump an urn of ashes in the ocean? You need a permit from the council.
The what, sorry?
It's illegal to dump an urn of ashes. Yeah, someone's dead body, someone's charred body, into the ocean without a permit.
Oh. Well, I wonder how they're going to wind up enforcing that. You know, Coast Guard's going to come and arrest you. What are they going to do? Seriously.
You just have
a look and it'd just be like, where's the evidence? Okay? Because it kind of just went into the ocean. You'd never be able to find it.
I mean, where is our money? Where are our rates going to when we have nutcases making such laws? I mean, who even thinks of that? We need to respell rates, man. We need to respell rates
and replace the T with a P. And that's about what it really is.
Yeah. But I mean, they're just thinking of every aspect of human activity. What can we do to issue a permit for next? Lighting a fire, burying a dead person. I mean, what are they thinking of? Just where are these people at? And who votes for them? Is what I want to know. Oh, the responsible people. You've got to vote, otherwise you can't complain. Who are you voting for, Vinny? Who are you voting for, Will?
If you do vote, I hate these
half-educated morons.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, if you do vote and then you complain, they then say that your complaints are inappropriate or it's not the forum for the top. You know, it's just for goodness sake.
Look,
pick an issue
send a
and stick with it. Stop giving up on reason, all right? Seriously, it is very, very freaking valuable and we're allowed to have it for a reason.
I mean, I mean, I know retarded people, friends and family of mine, who always, I'm writing a letter to the local MP, okay? That's the way things are done. You're a nutcase, you know, putting videos up on YouTube. You guys are nuts. You know, what you need to do is be sensible. There are the correct avenues for dissent. Just absolute mindless. People in their 50s doing this. They believe in the system so much. These guys get the letters and just like, yeah, ripping them up. And, you know, I don't look at them. Well, if it even gets past the PA of theirs. You kidding me?
Which it probably won't. I wonder what kind of training these PAs get to get, okay? These are all the things that you have to ignore, and it's like a huge volume, you know, like a Bible or a phone book.
like I know...
You're not supposed to report to the minister.
I know a PA of a prominent British MP in the Tory party, and I mean, I was told by them that, yeah, we had all these nuts in England writing us letters saying how they thought the surveillance society was tracking them personally and send us the next nut. And I corrected them and I was like, actually, well, you do have 4 million cameras. There are for 12 million people over there in London. I mean, actually, there is this huge surveillance grid. You were collecting DNA from the early 70s. This is all real. The person's not paranoid. And they're just like, oh, you know, whatever, well, you know. This was a PA for a prominent MP.
Yeah, sounds about right. And if you don't investigate, if you choose to ignore the information that is brought to you, you deserve the government that you get. Period. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, brought to you proudly by GorillaMedia.co.nz. And we'll be back next segment, ladies and gentlemen. Gentlemen, to hour number 2 of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, it's the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio, proudly brought to you in partnership with GorillaMedia.co.nz. We have a very special Kiwi collaborator for you today. In fact, I always say everybody's very special, don't I? And I suppose it's because everybody is to me. Her name is Maria Vandermeer from The City Is Ours, and she's been monitoring the situation in Wellington with these new bus lanes that have been opening up, and a heck of a lot of people are, in her namesakes, finding themselves on the van der wheels of the buses. Maria, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Vince.
Now, give us a breakdown. I mean, what's the real problem here? And you've in fact, you've been arrested very recently due to your activism, haven't you? Why?
Well, because we've been involved with this project for over 2 years, I'm pretty much clued up on what is safe and what's not. Now, the proposal, the Golden Mile proposal, was always going to be too big to fit in the ministry area. And citizen safety was, and still is, and always will be, an issue. And while the responsible owners have not taken much notice and waited until someone actually got hit, I find myself in the position where I had to take action and remove a cabbage tree, which was surrounded by a metal cage supporting it to grow, because it was a baby cabbage tree. However, it had reduced the footpath width below 1 meter, which is substandard, because the ministry width is meant to be 3 meters. And at this exact spot, a woman got hit by a bus, and I blamed the tree, so the tree had to go.
And they basically clamped you in irons because you were trying to protect the public. And I wish that that was not a story that I'd heard before, you know what I'm saying? But it turns out that in New Zealand in particular, anybody who tries to stand up and protect the public or ask questions of our fabulous government officials, being arrested is just, you know, par for the course. You can't protect society, you're a criminal. You know, which I suppose is why the government are still in their jobs, because they're doing the direct opposite of something that would wind up getting them arrested, wouldn't they? Oh, the tyranny.
Yes, well, you know, we all know where the real criminals are.
Yep, they're all living in a wonderful thing called a dystopian reality, you know.
Nothing good can happen in our country.
Our very special guest is Maria Vandermeer, ladies and gentlemen, from The City Is Ours, and we'll be right back next segment. And gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you by GorillaMedia.co.nz. Our special guest from Wellington, the nation's capital here in our little fabulous fluoride head slave state, New Zealand, is Maria Vandermeer. Maria, welcome back.
Yeah, thank you, Vinny. I'm still here.
Okay, cool. Yes, we can. Now, one thing I wanted you to do, because we have an international audience, maybe they're not 100% familiar with the background surrounding this case of the new bus lanes in Manners Mall. I was wondering if you could just preface it in the context in which it stands.
Well, you know, I could cut straight to the core and tell your listeners that we're talking about a piece of real estate that is called the Golden Mile for a reason. It is about 2.5 km long, and in the middle was this cute little place that belonged to the people. It was a gift from the city in the 60s. When the Ministry of Works decided that they would put the urban motorway through our lovely suburb of Thorndon, taking 50 hectares of heritage land and buildings, and then to proceed straight through the Bolton Street Cemetery causing 3,700 graves to be lifted. So Menes Mall has history. Menes Mall was ours, and they wanted it because it was exactly in the middle of the, you know what, Golden Mile. Golden Mile is the retail strip of Wellington. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And we've had Benjamin Easton on the show a couple of times talking about these phenomena, including one time where he took a sledgehammer to the pavement at the very opening of these busways. And, you know, I've been keeping track with his emails, and the width of the route itself is not enough. It doesn't even fit regular council regulations and things like that. And it's simply not safe. And everybody was told this. Everybody knew this. And Parliament was told this. People were lobbied, etc., etc. Nobody listened. And as soon as the mall opened up, people started getting hit by buses, as was predicted. And as a result, after all these people started getting hit, they didn't say, "Oh, maybe this is a bad idea because we're resulting in the immediate danger of the public." They say, "The public's really dumb. Let's put up some barriers so that these lemmings can't run out onto the road."
Yes. Well, it was a case of, of course, they knew all along that it was not safe and well below their own standards, including NZTA's. But these guys are all holding hands, by the way. Reason why we never got anywhere. Golden Mile was demanded by a plan referred to in, actually, it was way back in 2008, that the Nairanga to Airport Corridor plan was moved. By the then mayor, Kerry Prendergast. While she was doing that, she forgot to declare her conflict of interest because she herself has a directorship in the airport company who stood to benefit directly from this plan. Reason why her conflict was there is because she takes 37.5 grand a year for the directorship fee, which should technically go back in the council coffers, but hey, it goes into her private account. Not only that, her the airport company's constitution also forbade her to do airport business in council chambers.
Well, that was another that was another interesting point that was brought up, is that this these new bus routes, right, are being put in for the Rugby World Cup. And just like every part, I mean, I live in Auckland, and I live just down the road from the new stadium that's being built with millions of dollars of ratepayer and taxpayer money for an event that will be relatively short-lived in the grand scheme of things, will not make any money for the general public at all, and indeed is just basically inconveniencing everybody, to say the least. And the Manners Mall thing is basically just like, okay, huge corporate event comes to town. Let's destroy everything that makes our city great in order to accommodate them. And indeed, the original plan, or at least one of the better plans that was suggested, was that this new bus lane go straight past the council offices, so that they would hear all the incredibly loud noises of buses. But all the council officers said, no, we don't want all that stuff, man.
Oh, yes, it's very much a cleaning up our own backyards exercise. But I just want to come back to the point that you made. We saw the same in China during the Olympics. I mean, some families were disowned of their properties because it stood in the way of a pretty garden that they needed to have in front of some sort of, you know, Olympic stadium. Unfortunately, these people never got compensated. But that's an extreme, but it's comparable. We're looking at, you know, a regime that does what it wants, when it wants, and like I pointed out before, and this is something that your American listeners won't be aware of. In New Zealand, we have a system called ACC, where if one gets hurt, i.e. run over by a bus, ACC takes care of it. We don't have liabilities.
Well, yeah, and you know, for me personally, I think that's one thing I really do enjoy, that I don't have to go out and hire a lawyer and get myself monstrously into debt just so that I can sue somebody so that I can survive. You know what I'm saying? Have all that stress on top of an accident. You know, some people are upset with the idea of ACC being a public corporation, but you know, technically, in fact, that's an interesting point to bring up here. Is that ACC is now being looked at by the government for privatization because, oh, it's not profitable, when it made a profit of something like $10 million last year.
Yeah. Mm. Well, it's interesting. It kind of, you know, these sorts of government, you'll have to excuse me because English is my second language. I came here in 1974 from the Netherlands. But yeah, these government departments are all just, you know, set up to, you know, promote this sort of behaviour, and you know, the public is kind of unaware of what's happening. But yes, the what we refer to as the Golden Mile takeover was, you know, a directive from the airport company. Now, the airport company, of course, is owned by two people. It's the Round and Ratepayers. They have a 34% stake, and the other is Infratil, 66%. Now, the problem with that is that Infratil also owns the bus company that goes through the CBD, and they're subsidised by the ratepayers to provide a service. Now, the government last year or the year before demanded that the regional council was to upgrade their ticketing systems and, you know, waiving a considerable budget in their base. So they went and chased that up and started tendering. And, of course, you won't be surprised if I told you that Infratil got the contract and they have now infiltrated all our public services. And in a view, with a view, in my opinion, but it's my opinion only, with a view to, with the Snapper card, and it's coming to Auckland, you've already signed up for it, the Snapper card effectively gives the Infratil an opportunity to gain entry into the retail industry, because it's not just the bus card, you can do A, B and C with it. To gain entry into the retail industry so they can compete with banks at point of sale.
And further on with conflicts of interest, I believe one of the people involved with this process owned property that would have gone down in value had the bus route been alternate. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. We snapped Councillor Helen Ritchie for her conflict, where she owns a million-dollar apartment on Mercer Street, where the buses ran before the changes. And, she was voting for buses, and we said, excuse me, I don't think you can do that. So she stopped voting, which meant that we started looking even harder at... we never snapped the mayor, though, but we snapped another person who is now the new mayor of Wellington, Celia Wade Brown. And this is all from just being on the street talking to Joe Blogg. I'm telling you, the street is where it's at, and that's why, you know, we are so upset that we've lost our mall, because that was our place. This is where we exchanged ideas, you know, all those sort of things. And yeah. Effectively, we've lost our voice. But anyway, while we were campaigning, this is early stages, I was approached personally twice by a member of the public, and they came up to me and said, you don't have to worry about Celia. She won't vote for this. And I said, I beg your pardon? Because she already had. And he said, oh, she's with Living Streets Aotearoa. I said, oh, really? Well, Living Streets Aotearoa is an organisation that has been around for around 7 years, and Celia Wade Brown was the president, and I say was because when we discovered that this is what she was doing as the president of Living Streets Aotearoa, which, by the way, promotes pedestrians and cyclists, she had to resign to carry on voting for it. Now, we believe that she did this because she already knew at that time she was standing for mayor and with her ticket for light rail. Now, light rail also needed Manus Mall. So, yes, it's sort of all, you know, all the pennies started to drop. It was interesting.
And have the police been approached about this, or how exactly are you approaching the situation in terms of getting some description of accountability? Are you even being listened to?
Well, I'm a very practical person, and yes, I did go to the police. I was told in no uncertain terms I was wasting my time. As a matter of fact, the council, not so long ago, and I believe you are aware of this, Vince, the bus lanes in Auckland had a flying squad. Do you remember that? Flying squad was a unit that was had special dispensation from the police to fine cars that used the bus lane illegally. Well, they've introduced the same in Wellington. We now have a flying squad. So, effectively, I think the police may be under the impression that all is in hand and they've taken a hands-off approach. But there are way more issues than just, you know, cars going through bus lane only areas.
Well, yeah, I mean, for example, pedestrians being hit by the buses, you know, themselves, and the buses, in fact, being too wide to fit down the street anyway, you know? Correct. And it just seems to me that, you know, this is just one of a million stories of real basic open corruption, right? And let me guess, the media hasn't reported on any of this?
No, forget about the media. They're actually really good at, you know, blacklisting us. I mean, we ended up on their front page because they got so desperate. People like the Chamber of Commerce came at us. Even Infratil themselves, when we started to gain public support by way of an e-petition, signatures were just growing and growing and growing. So the Chamber of Commerce made their effort to undermine that, and so that New Zealand Bus, they had a campaign on the buses themselves where people could text this number to say, yes, we support the bus lanes. This information was all added up by the city council officers in the report and held against each other. I mean, Our e-petition had nearly 2,000 signatures, and the Chamber of Commerce had something like 300 and something, and NZ Bus had 500 texts. But they lumped us all together and advised the councillors that while these numbers were notable, they were not to be included in the decision, in the final decision-making process. How's that?
Well, it sounds like a really open and transparent way to do business to make sure everybody's got a say.
Ah! Yeah, right.
But, you know, and again, government just seems to be this great, I don't know. It's like William Shakespeare said, all the world's a stage and we're all actors on it, you know? That's basically what's going on here. But we're... And whom, more operatively, is writing the script? You know? Are these politicians making decisions for themselves, or are they just carrying out orders from on high?
Wow. Well, it's interesting because I was quite intrigued with Hillary Clinton's sudden arrival at the airport and her very short stay, and the agreement that was signed. Basically, it's starting to undermine our anti-nuclear stance that we Kiwis are so proud of, and it's kept the
Isn't it lovely, ladies and gentlemen, that we live in what Transparency International calls the perceived least corrupt country in the world? Perception is not reality. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show, well, on American Freedom Radio and Rush 89 FM in Hamilton. We'll be right back, folks. Ladies and gentlemen, for the fastest 2 hours in talk radio, it's the Vinny Eastwood Show at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, brought to you proudly in conjunction with guerrillamedia.co.nz. Also, welcome back to our guest, Maria van der Meel from This City Is Ours. Maria, welcome back.
Yeah, cheers.
All right. Now, there was another element to this equation that we have not yet touched on, that of the airport dictating the bus route itself. I'm not quite clear on this.
Well, if you, I mean, it's all on the internet. It's a wonderful medium to get the information you want, as you well know. That's where I got mine, and the airport master plan 2030. Where they're talking about doubling the passenger capacity coming into Wellington. They have, in no uncertain terms, put the pressure on the Wellington Regional Council and the Wellington City Council themselves to provide the necessary transport routes to support this growth, albeit a long-term plan, with an ability to change their minds on plans within it. Basically, you know, they just came along and waved $450 million in the face of two councils that are both cash-strapped.
Well, cash-strapped how? I mean, what do you mean?
Well, the City Council is in debt to the tune of $450 million. By the time we start paying for the indoor stadium and fixing leaky homes.
Oh, that's very interesting. Well, because look at this. Again, similar situation with Auckland. We're building this enormous freaking stadium for the World Cup specifically, getting our council massively into debt in order to build it, and of course not using any government employees or anything like that to build it. No. It's private contractors, of course. So private corporations benefit from public money right there and then. Fantastic. Isn't that open and transparent and wonderful? And on top of that, you know, all these orders come from on high and nobody really seems to have any say in the process. I mean, what kind of public consultation was there?
Well, the public consultation was over the top. And you would, I mean, from that behaviour, you would instantly derive that they just had to have it. You know what I mean?
I just had to have it. Oh, no. There's nothing else we can do. We must have the bus lanes to trample those annoying pedestrians. Oh, yes. Ooh.
Yeah, you're on to it, Vinny.
What kind of snivelling little, Lord of the Rings-ish kind of characters have we got behind the scenes pushing this junk? You know, I mean, come on. And as far as reaction from Parliament is concerned, do they even give a flying F about this? Have they even bothered replying in any kind of non-disingenuous fashion to any of the inquiry set forth by The City Is Ours or Benjamin Easton?
No, it was, total brick wall replies, referring us back to the original, useless people that we had already dealt with. So it's a vicious cycle, really. But we're not giving up. We need to protect the public. This is what has come out of the whole process for us. We now need to protect the public. Because guess what? My children live here. Thank you very much.
You know, people don't really care about your kids, though, do they, Maria? Oh, my goodness. I mean, if I had a nickel for every time the government ruthlessly killed somebody for no good reason, I'd be a very rich man. In fact, I'd probably own the world.
Well, maybe you could buy some shares in Infratil like the Chamber of Commerce did.
Well, Chamber of Commerce has got shares in Infratil. Could you explain that?
Well, because I was kind of new to the scene and quite innocent, I thought that I would join the Chamber of Commerce. And I thought, well, fat chance of me getting in. You know, I'm just Joe Public with a silly name. The City Is Ours. Who the hell is that? What do you do? You know, that, those are the sort of questions. But, I went online and they have a community application, so I joined under a community group, and that gave me access to all the material, including the annual reports. Righty, righty, right. Oh, look, you'll be surprised what kind of shareholdings the Chamber of Commerce has. Well, Infratil, of course, is one. That particular year, the CEO for New Zealand Bus sat on the board for the Chamber of Commerce and held the infrastructure portfolio. Surprise, surprise. Yeah, so the Chamber of Commerce is just a shareholder of global economies.
Could you elaborate on that?
Well, how can you elaborate on that? It's simple. They invest in major companies who have interests not just in your country, but overseas as well. I mean, Infratil was everywhere. They're in Europe, they're in Australia. They have just diverted their interest, their investments into Shell, New Zealand.
You mean Royal Dutch Shell, owned by Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands, the wonderful Bilderberg Group member?
Yes. I'm so ashamed of it, but there you have it.
Oh, God. Oh, this country really ticks me off sometimes, and it ticks me off even more because it's my country. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
There's just seemingly absolutely no end to it, is there? I mean, it just gets worse and worse and worse, and people get more and more and more apathetic and do jack nothing. Speaking of apathetic and doing jack nothing, what about the public? I mean, has the public in any way came into bat for you guys?
Well, it wasn't not half so hard in the beginning. When we started running the Wellington Loves Men Is More campaign, and like I said, the consultation period was long and hard. In the beginning it wasn't too bad, but then once the Dominion Post stepped in, giving us a bad name, it was very hard to come back from that, as far as the public was concerned. But yeah, no, it's an ongoing saga for us.
But, you know, I'm talking about in general, you know, you're on the street fairly often trying to talk to the public about this. Would you be able to gauge the general public opinion for us? I mean, what's the word on the street?
Well, during the consultation period and when we were making people aware that they had an opportunity to have a say, even when I went to the retailers directly affected in Manners Mall, they didn't even know that they could actually make a submission and give their points of view. They had been basically told by the council, well, this is what we're doing, and that's it. So when they saw me, in the first instance, they couldn't figure out who I was. They actually thought I was with the council. And a lot of people think that. They think I'm with the council, and I'm not. So it's... Look, what I find is that if you want something done, but streetwise, I mean, the number one thing to do is to wear a fluoro jacket with your name on it, because it gives you authority. And people tend to be more persuaded by somebody wearing a what seems an official jacket. So, lesson learned, Kiwis are, or the public in general, are recognize certain signals, if you know what I mean. So we've learned to tune in to those perceived ideas, and we're hoping to gain more ground as the year goes on and more pedestrians get hit by buses, and it will only be a matter of time before someone gets killed.
But well, how many people have been hit already?
We had another hit yesterday, and the Dominion Post reported as the fourth pedestrian hit. We disagree with those numbers. We know there's more, but they go unreported.
Well, in your analysis of it, how many hits would you say that there have been? I mean, the official line is four. What's your line?
I would say twice that many. And then you've got all your near misses, where people have reported to the council at the call centre that they witnessed a near miss between a wing mirror and someone's head. This is how close the buses are going past the footpath. I mean, and the main worry now is, and you'll be probably thinking about that too soon, is the Rugby World Cup. Now, Auckland, of course, it's much bigger, but because of the compactness of our city and the narrowness of the footpaths, we won't be able to cope.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. And this World Cup is being used as an excuse to justify so many things. In fact, last year, I was talking to Rose Hollins, who's a good activist up here in Auckland, about why the super city legislation, you know, the big massive corporate takeover of Auckland, was being passed under urgency and instantly, was zero public consultation pretty much, no referendum, no possibility of a binding public poll as we're guaranteed under the thing. You know, it's just a straight up effing corporate takeover, right? And I asked her, you know, what's the timing here? Why is this happening now rather than 10 years ago or 10 years from now? And she said, well, it's the Rugby World Cup. They want everything under their control so that they can basically milk everything out of those particular events, you know?
Yes.
And I imagine that it's the exact same thing for Wellington, corporate takeover.
Yeah, absolutely. With the backing of the Chamber of Commerce.
What new powers has the Chamber of Commerce been given? I mean, what's going on here?
Look, the ex-mayor, Kerry Prendergast, often referred to the Chamber of Commerce in council meetings where she needed to, get a certain result. Whereas the Chamber of Commerce, and having been a member myself, will often go along to places like the council, the regional council, the government even, and make verbal submissions to you know, a project or whatever, and they'll claim they'll have 1,000 members, where in reality they only have 750. And then they'll say the majority of our membership has supported this project. Well, the majority of their membership, being 750, not 1,000, doesn't even live in Wellington or operate from Wellington. This is the Wellington Regional Chamber of Commerce. So you've got businessmen in Petone, which is another district, telling us Wellingtonians whether we should have a bus lane or not. What's up with that?
Well, it doesn't make any sense. Well, but, oh, man. Corporate dictatorship's a wonderful thing, isn't it? I'd like to thank you very much, Maria, for coming on the show with us today. Do you have a website?
No, I'm not that organized.
All right, that's cool. Don't worry. We'll send you the link to the archive of this particular show so you can send that round your email list and get people to listen to the real facts for the change that the mainstream media will not report on. Thanks again for coming on the show, Maria.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. It's great. Keep up the good work.
Will do. Maria van der Meer, ladies and gentlemen, from the city is ours in Wellington. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will on American Freedom Radio, and we'll be right back. Nobody can stop us now, not even useless little pieces of crud who think that they're, you know, the ultimate. In fact, I'm not going to use the show as a soapbox to put out my opinion, am I?
Well, look, there's a very big difference between opinions and facts sometimes. And just because something comes out of someone's mouth as their opinion doesn't mean it's devoid of facts. And just because something comes out of someone's mouth as an opinion doesn't mean it's based upon any facts either. And so this is the problem we have. Not everyone's opinion is worth as much as the next person's. You try and tell that to a person who believes in the collectivist, you know, animal farm sort of scenario we're living in. It's very difficult to break down anything in any discernible way. People these days are just cynical if they're not too vapid to listen to you in the first place. I mean, it's it's almost like sometimes I feel, who is anyone to tell anyone anything? Because at the end of the day, all right, if someone doesn't want to hear you, someone doesn't want to listen to you, someone doesn't want to agree, they're just going to cement themselves in a certain position, which is probably why propaganda works the best. Now, David Rockefeller and the Rothschilds and all these families have been able to spread their sermon without people even knowing their names. In non-intrusive ways, they're not like Jehovah's Witnesses. Everyone hates them. Hey, you're not paying your taxes to them. They're not poisoning your food and water. They're not hurting you in any way. Everyone freaks out at them when they come to your door, though. I'm not defending it, and I'm not saying I'm one of them or anything. I'm just saying, look, some guy comes to your house with a message, you freak out. You turn on the TV for hours every night, though, and get brainwashed by a big bad cabal that runs your life, and they've got a message for you. You don't respond to that the same way.
Yeah, it's funny, like the out of sight, out of mind. And I think it's because people don't look that they act so mindless.
And it's social proof. You know, it's not hard to imagine that five Jehovah's Witnesses come into your door. They're bad. They're wrong. But it is hard to imagine that the five corporations that run the world's mainstream media are bad and corrupt. Somehow that's hard for people. It's big. And if it's big, it must be right, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If everyone believes there's gold dust raining from the sky, there must be gold dust raining from the sky. I mean, it's this whole perception as reality world that just messes people up, I tell you.
Well, I feel very messed up with it quite regularly. You know, I think that being messed up is now a state of more normality. You know what I'm saying? Well, it's like to be out of your mind is now so commonplace that it is, in fact, totally accepted as the regular thing to do. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't make any sense to me, but it still keeps going on and on and on and on, you know? And it's almost like any description of rudimentary logic that you would apply to any social situation, you know, whether it be the news being manipulated or the water supply being poisoned, people don't pay attention because it's not something that they've been brought up with or decided to believe in. And they decide, really, that they're not going to pay attention to it. You know, they actively make a decision to be retarded sometimes. You know, but we don't want to be misanthropic about all of this because, you know, after all, the majority of the effect on people's minds here, I say, is not part of their own decisions. I say it is very much a part of the influence that has been put on them by all this new media that we've got and technology, you know, usurping all the humanity, etc., etc. It's all crazed up. And we've got this this human nature doctrine that says, you know, we're supposed to love each other, and it seems to be getting overwritten like computer code.
Well, here's the other side of it, though, Vinny. I mean, I'm well aware of all the manipulation that goes on there, and I've still spent the majority of my life as a manipulated slave, regardless of, you know, supposedly waking up about, you know, 5-6 years ago, about 6 years ago now. It still becomes a thing of individual responsibility. Because I'm a person for free market, because I'm a person for liberty, liberty comes with personal responsibility. That's what freedom means. Freedom's dangerous. Individuals have to take responsibility for their own thoughts and actions. And if individuals can't look up at the sky at night and see an uncountable number of stars and then wonder what sort of world they're living in, wonder why, when there's so much unknown, that there's so much government dictate at the same time, if people can't work out that we're living in a slave state, that is their fault also. It's not just the system's fault for brainwashing them. It's the individual's responsibility to look after themselves, their family, and their people. And there's not a good enough excuse yet.
Well, you know, that's why I see it. We make excuses every day to not do things that are good for us. You know, I was talking with somebody last night about fluoride in the water and how it's now got radiation and things like that in it. And he goes, oh, well, everybody's going to die sometime. And I say, you know what? You're right. Let's go play a game. It's called Let's Swallow the Stuff Under the Sink.
And then the same people say not getting insurance on your car, house, and body is playing Russian roulette. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Hey, well, it's frustration and ludicrous bollocks that we all have to put up with every day. And quite frankly, if we can't laugh about it, we will go ridiculously quickly insane. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show. You don't need to understand insanity, because if you did, you'd go